Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We'll be talking to Ottawa correspondent David Fraser about the federal government's new surplus food buying program. Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer Express joins us to talk about how new ag grads are adjusting to the pandemic-driven workplace. And Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm will fill us in on the latest ups and downs of the commodity markets. But first, we're joined by Country Guide magazine's Lorraine Stevenson. She wrote recently about a study that shows less media attention is being paid to farm accidents and why that's concerning. Thanks for joining us today, Lorraine.
Hi, Gord.
So we still hear about farm accidents in the media, but how they're reported, it's changed, and as you note in your piece. Can you tell us what's different?
Well, what's different is they just don't seem to get the attention that they once did. Earlier this year, the Journal of Agromedicine published a report on how media report agriculture injuries and fatalities in the period of time between 2010 and 2017. It looked at about 850 media reports, and they compared those reports with a prior analysis of coverage between 2007 and 2009. And what that study concluded was that about one in four news articles conveyed some kind of, they call it a prevention message. That is, something in the story that provided some information to the reader or the listener as to how farmers might reduce their own risk in a similar circumstance. So what that report, what that study found was just actually a little under 3% had really delved into any in any depth into what actually happened and discussed in the piece why it may have occurred. So to answer your question, what's different? The articles are shorter. They make, say, you know, the age, the where the event happened. But if the report goes into any sort of detail, it's often around the community rallying or support for the family. Does not get into the detail of what may have occurred.
And what specifically, then, is missing from reporting on farm accidents, according to the authors of this study?
Yeah, well, what they say is missing is this, as we say, a prevention message. And what that is something in the piece that comes from, you know, a recognized professional in farm safety who could say, you know, in an incident like this, this may not have specifically happened, be the cause of this particular event, but generally in events like this, the kinds of precautions that could have been or should be taken are dot, dot, dot. It just, a prevention message is about, you know, what are cautionary behaviors or what are specific things farmers could be doing to reduce similar risks of this happening to themselves. And, you know, what's missing is that that report may have gone out without having reached out to a farm safety professional to at least ask what tends to go wrong. You know, even if we don't know at this point in time what exactly happened in this specific event.
In particular, you note in the article that many dislike the term, a term such as freak accident. And why do they object to that so strenuously?
Well, just think about what a freak accident implies to you and me. It suggests that whatever happened was highly unusual. And to use that phrase in the context of talking about an injury or death on the farm is, you know, we know that the farm environment is not an unusual circumstance, and the job site is a very familiar place to the farm operator. So whatever goes wrong is not a quote-unquote freak accident. Whatever went wrong that led to the injury or the death is due to a lapse of attention or preventative action. And you know, when we know that there are certain types of injuries that occur repeatedly, that's a pattern. That's not a one-off.
So did the authors of the study have any insight into what's driven this change in tone in reportage on accidents?
Well, they do talk about, you know, acknowledging that the newsroom across the country is a barer bones operation than it once used to be. There are fewer reporters. There's less time to and less resources to devote to specific stories. So they acknowledge that reporters in all types of media are just finding it harder to make these particular events priorities for coverage. So, you know, I think as a reporter myself, having covered farm safety for a number of years, we know that when an incident has occurred in a, you know, geographically distant location, it's almost impossible, given a tight timeline to a deadline, to dispatch someone to the site. And I also know that when something has happened, there is an investigation that begins, and until that is complete, the professionals involved are reluctant to talk about it in too much detail. So it is just a combination of a lot of things that make getting that prevention message to the readership or the listener, it's a complicated thing to do when you're running on a short deadline and when you have fewer staff to devote their time to it.
So what does all this mean then in terms of managing risk on farms?
Despite less attention paid to farm safety in all forms of media, what we do know is that there has been significant attention paid to this in the farm community. There is a lot of education and awareness programming that's gone on in recent years. It has been ramped up very significantly to the point where you have many farm groups and the commodity orgs and agencies are heavily invested in talking about safety on the farm. And I, you know, to their credit, I think there are many more very well-managed farms that have put in place significant safety programs for their families and their employees. So I want to believe, and I think it is evident, that farmers do pay a lot more attention to managing this risk than they ever did. But that being said, agriculture is still a super dangerous industry. It's still the fourth highest in terms of the number of fatal injuries in Canada, behind mining and forestry and fishing. So even with all this effort that's gone into farm safety education, it's still a very dangerous job to be doing. And, you know, on in terms of these things happening, it is just horrifyingly devastating to the family, and it can take a huge toll on the farm business itself. So I was quite taken with this study, and I think it is a reminder that it behooves journalists to keep paying attention to farm safety and to make detailed coverage of these incidents with attention paid to this kind of what went wrong, what could we do to prevent it, paid to the article when it's being developed. As they say in this report, these incidents are teachable moments. And when they happen, the farm safety community is paying a lot of attention to it. And it's a time when, it's an opportunity for talking about how to do things better and how to prevent similar tragedies from happening.
Well, thank you for joining us today and telling us a little bit about it.
You're welcome.
That was Lorraine Stevenson of Country Guide telling us about why how farm accidents are reported is important. You are listening to Between the Rows, and I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. A bit later, we'll chat with our man in Ottawa, David Fraser, about a new surplus food buying program. And Markets Farm's Phil Franz Workington will tell us about a couple of key government reports expected later this week. But first, Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer Express joins us to tell us how the most recent cohort of agriculture grads are making their way in the world of today. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you talked to a number of new ag grads about the end of their education career and the beginning of their professional careers during this unusual time. Can you tell us how it's been different than they've expected?
There's a single ag student or grad who's entering the workforce quite the way that they expected this year. The pandemic has really right out the window. Within about a two-week span, campuses were closed, classes were moved online, curriculums were completely changed, and in some cases, students had to pack up and move back home. So, they didn't even have kind of a convocation to mark the end of their time at school. So I'm sure it's been a pretty stressful and disappointing and challenging time for them, but, was I impressed by their ability to kind of roll with the punches and take all of this these changes in. They've really seemed to adapt well to kind of this ever-changing situation, and I think that's probably a skill that will serve them really well during their career in agriculture.
So tell us a bit then about how they were forced to adapt, especially in terms of wrapping up the last of their diplomas and degrees. I don't know exactly when things got serious out in Alberta, but here in Manitoba, we're talking, early to mid-March kind of thing. So that was, right in the heart of what would traditionally be sort of wrapping things up. What did they have to do then to sort of transition into the new world?
Point, for the most part, spring semesters were really starting to wind down when the pandemic hit. It was kind of more late March here. So I don't think that the transition to online learning was as big of a shock as it might have been if it had happened earlier. They had some final projects and exams that they had to take care of, but from the sounds of it, the post-secondary institutions handled that transition online very well. So I think that the biggest concern was more with the hands-on learning opportunities the schools offer. Things like the student-managed farm at Lakeland College really does promote that kind of learn-to-do-by-doing model. And there are just some competencies and things that need to be taught in a hands-on way. You don't want vet students learning how to perform surgery over Zoom, for example. I think a lot of students actually get into the industry because they like to get their hands a bit dirty and they want to be hands-on. So moving online was a bit of a struggle in that aspect.
And now, I guess the next question I would have is, as the rubber hits the road and they're entering the workforce, what are they finding out about the job market during this unusual period?
So for some students, it's been a bit more challenging finding a job. And in some cases, the nature of those jobs has changed because of social distancing. But I think the biggest shift for them is really not having that opportunity for face-to-face relationship building that the agriculture industry really is built on and really thrives on. You know, they're not as able to get out there and meet farmers and other people in the industry. So, you know, in some ways, I think they feel that their entry into the industry has been a bit stunted. You know, they aren't able to create the relationships and the networks that they're going to have to rely on during the course of their careers in the industry. So I think that's been really tough for them.
And are there areas that they're finding sort of fewer opportunities for them?
You know, anecdotally, I've heard that on the production side of things, where social distancing is a little more possible, you know, things like working with livestock or working, you know, out in the fields on a farm. You know, there's lots of those types of opportunities up there. But for more of the office-based jobs, you know, accounting or maybe marketing, kind of the business side of things, it's been, I think, a bit more of a challenge to find those jobs. So it's not to say that those opportunities don't exist. I think that they're probably just in a bit shorter supply with greater competition.
And generally, I know that it's impossible to answer 100% for everybody, but generally, are you finding that these newly graduated students are optimistic about the sector, its future, that sort of thing?
I think that was one of the things that surprised me most in chatting with all of these different students is, you know, if anything, the young people I spoke with are even more excited about their future in the industry, kind of despite this rocky start. You know, the pandemic has really underscored for a lot of people how important food production is and supply chains. And for a lot of these ag students, it's proven to them that they're on the right path in a way, you know, that there's value in being part of an industry that feeds the world. So, you know, when you've worked in the industry for a while, I think you kind of lose sight of that sometimes. I think you lose sight of that bigger picture. But, you know, listening to those young people talk about the industry and talk about their future within it, you know, they were so hopeful, and that made me more hopeful for the future of the industry.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. I appreciate you kind of running us through this.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Great to chat with you.
That was Alberta Farmer Express's Jennifer Blair, who found resilience and optimism among the latest crop of ag grads. You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. In just a bit, Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm will fill us in on market movements. But first, here's Ottawa correspondent David Fraser to fill us in on a new surplus food buying program. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks again for having me, Gord.
So what is driving this move to a federal food surplus buying program?
Yeah, so I would say that there's a couple of different pieces here. The first and maybe the most important is that despite having the abundance of food in Canada, many people, as I'm sure you know, still don't have proper food to eat. I think there's about 4 million Canadians, that's 1 in 8 households, struggling to put food on the table right now. And to me, that's something that should be addressed, and the financial challenges of the pandemic, I think, have really highlighted the need to do just that. So that's one thing this program is looking to do, but also, as listeners will know, there's a surplus of food. There's hundreds of millions of dollars just in potatoes sitting in storage right now, and we all know the challenges around meat production, and there's a need to get fish and seafood onto people's plates as well. So given the federal government is offering to buy that excess, those excess commodities at a lower than retail price, suggests to me that perhaps Justin Trudeau and his Liberal government are more keen on addressing that first issue of food insecurity rather than ensuring all the spoiled food in Canada doesn't go to waste. But of course, those two issues do go hand in hand, at least when it comes to the $50 million being made available through this program.
And how much do we know about so far about how it's going to be structured, where this food will end up, and how it will get to those folks that need it?
Yeah, sure. So last week, AAFC laid out the application guidelines on their website. And essentially, the funding is going to be split into thirds between horticulture, with, again, a big highlight on potatoes there, as well as meat and seafood. Money is going to be given to organizations that are capable of buying and then, if needed, processing or storing that excess food that would otherwise be destroyed. And then the organizations who are given that money are also going to be responsible for transporting and delivering that food to vulnerable or remote populations. organizations across the country.
So what kind of organizations are we talking about then? Food banks? Anything else that jumps to mind?
Yeah, so the federal government is accepting applications from for-profit and not-for-profit organizations. I think, at least to me, food banks sort of leap out at the top of the list as organizations who would be eligible and capable of doing this. But really what the federal government seems to be looking for is any organization that is capable of getting the job done. As again, listeners will know, it's one thing just to be able to purchase excess food. It's another thing to process and store it if you need to, let alone transport it and identify the vulnerable community. So I would expect to see food banks pretty high up on organizations getting the money, but there's also a number of organizations and even for-profit companies in Canada who are already sort of dealing in this realm of food insecurity who I'm guessing are going to be applying.
And do we know anything about when we'll see the first purchases made?
So the easiest way of answering that is probably just to simply say as soon as possible. Applications to access the money are being accepted until the end of July or until the money comes out, whichever one of those arrives first. Given that July 31st is a little over a month away, I'd expect applications have already been submitted and some of that money is already on its way out the door soon. I haven't heard anything to that end yet from the federal government, but I would expect they're trying to get applications processed as fast as they can, and it really comes down to just that, Ottawa's ability to process those applications and approve organizations in a timely manner before we start seeing the money go out the door.
And
it's something we're going to be checking in on, of course. So.
Of course. What can farmers do then to participate in this program? Thanks so much, David.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
That was Ottawa correspondent David Fraser telling us about a surplus food buying program from the feds. This is Between the Rows, and I'm your host for the week, Gord Gilmore. Now, last but not least, we're joined by Markets Farm's Phil Franz Workington with the latest on commodities. Phil, thanks a lot for joining us. So both StatsCan and the USDA have acreage reports out next week, and I'm imagining the market's watching that fairly closely. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the markets will be watching it fairly closely. And on the Canadian side, the previous report kind of came out at the height of when the COVID pandemic was just hitting the country, and so the numbers were not quite as accurate as they normally would have been. They weren't able to survey everyone, and it was more estimates than usual. So this number will be a bit closer to what the actual numbers will be. Always taken with a grain of salt, anyways. But the general ideas are that there might be a bit less canola and spring wheat seeded in Canada than originally thought, while that acres will go to the pulses instead, and the time of seeding that weren't really captured in the earlier estimates. That said, the whatever numbers come out, there'll be adjustments as well due to actual seeding conditions, and there's probably going to be some acres lost in Alberta. It's been pretty wet out there in northern Alberta, so there'll be some cuts to crops would actually get seeded out there. Whatever the numbers come out next week will be more kind of not technically the first official numbers, but more official than the last one. For the U.S., there'll be also attention will be on soybeans and corn, and sort of what is happening there. The general sense is that there'll be less corn and more soybeans seeded than the original earlier ideas. Partly due to the price trends over the last while, and a lot of corn didn't go in the more northern U.S. It's been too wet, and soybeans can go in the ground later. So that's kind of the sentiment behind that. But yeah, the June 29th and 30th, we'll have back-to-back reports out of Canada and the U.S. that have the potential to swing markets if there's any surprises.
And beyond these reports, I'm sure they're the usual suspects. At this time of year, weather's always something that people are watching. What's going on that front?
Yeah, exactly. The weather's, like I mentioned earlier, in Alberta, there's the northern part is fairly wet, and that's the last forecast I saw. There's more rain in the forecast out there, so that's too wet over there. There's here in Manitoba, we're probably sitting okay in the eastern part of Manitoba, but to the west of Manitoba and into Saskatchewan, there's big areas that are on the dry side and could use some rain. So it's sort of a tale of two cities, two prairies. There's too wet in some areas, too dry in others, and so that's kind of keeping the markets on edge, depending on where the sentiment leans one day to the next. In the U.S., it's the latest reports I've seen seem fairly decent on conditions there. They've had good rains and reasonable heat, but as always, it's kind of a height of the going into the bulk of the growing season, and any adjustments one day to the next in the forecast have the potential to really get markets moving.
And what about the China file? There's been a bit of movement, certainly on the political front there recently, and some key court decisions and so on. How has that translated into the market?
Yeah, Canada's whole situation with the China, there was the two Canadians were officially charged last week. It doesn't seem to have really done much of anything. It's kind of at a standstill from the canola market. I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff going on behind the scenes, but not much is really happening there. In the U.S., there's been just overnight, the last day or two on this week, has been the trade deal between China and the U.S. was off again last night for a little bit. That caused markets to tank in the U.S., but then Trump came on Twitter and said, "Oh no, it's still going along as it's supposed to." So the beans jumped back up, and but it's been that way for the past year or more. One day to the next, oh, there's a deal, there's not a deal. It's confusing to say the least, and anybody's guess what is actually happening on the China trade front. Because at the end of the day, China's still buying stuff, but are they buying it from North America or Brazil or where is the question? I guess you have the whole pandemic on top of it, kind of adjusting world trade flows. But more question marks than answers mm-hmm. when it comes to China, as is usually the case on that front.
Right. And then just on a closing note, you had mentioned that canola has been running into resistance after trending higher for 3 weeks or so. Anything to read into that?
Yeah, let me just, I had a chart up here, let me look at it. It's kind of the prices had hit low maybe 3 weeks ago or so in the beginning of June, late May, climbed steadily higher for, you know, most of the past few weeks, and then kind of hit a plateau looking at the November contract, which is the new crop. That's where most of the trade is these days. It sort of hit the $480 seems to be the top for now. It was trading around that area in late May, dropped down, lost about $10-$15, slowly climbed back up through June, and then hit that 480 level on Monday of this week, and then has dropped back down, and that's kind of seems to be the upside target for now. If it breaks above that, it could next resistance is at 490, but that seems to be holding as a resistance point for now. And if the selling continues, it's got another like $8-$10 to the downside before it hits support.
Well, great. Thanks for your time, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
That was Phil Franz Workington with the latest from commodity markets. That's another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, saying so long, and we'll hope you'll join us again next time.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.